Now, storyteller Kevin Kling invites us on an imagined ride by that famous little monkey, Curious George, through hell.
Once upon a distant time, early in life's journey, George did find himself in the basement of a five and dime. Now, how he got there is not quite clear. He remembers tearing loose from his mother's hairy hand as the escalator neared the bottom, and although the sign said step up, George's feet remained flat, for he knew curiosity killed the cat, but wasn't he a primate and above all that? Down, down, down rode George. Nine times his eardrums popped, and when the dissension stopped, a sign that said, "Abandon hope in the land of the dead, unless your height exceeds that of the clown's head." George stretched his neck till slanted brow cleared red wig, until a shade in a blue blazer appeared with a poodle that appeared to be sheared by a third grader with a tunic and lid. "Hello, speak the specter. My name is Scott, and I'll be your guide. Down, Trixie, outside, go for a walk. Now, people, the ride through the horror of Hades is a bit bumpy, so I'll be handing out steaming cups of coffee. Stay in your seats. That means you, George. Foreshadowing, foreshadowing. I'm a foreshade. I'm a foreshade." George got in his cart and took a sip. The cart lurched forward. He burnt his lip. Then before his open baby blue spheres, mechanical creatures from the past did appear. There was Hamlet eating a rotten Danish, a hall of vice presidents apologizing in Spanish, Nostradamus, Nicodemus, Rasputin, and Faust, Ozzy Osbourne singing an aria from Deflatormouse. But behind the facade, real screams were leaking. "Ooh, that sounds like hell," said George, "and that's where I'm seeking. Back in your seat, you naughty monkey." George, quick as a hiccup, ditched his guide, spied a door that said Non Sagrada Familia, and stepped inside. "Ah, this is more like it," said George, as he spied a woman with six children affixed to her six breasts. "Excuse me, ma'am, excuse me," said the simian. "Could you tell me the sin that brought you to this condition?" And she, "Well, I wish I could, but I've forgotten all that. Oh, there's my original sin, but that's old hat." "Well, perhaps it has to do with the children," queried the ape. "Oh, no, these are my pride and joys. On the left are the girls, and on the right are the boys. But, these boys have stayed on long past their prime, and, these girls bite down without reason or rhyme." "Well, what about the two on the bottom?" said George. "They seem content." "Oh, no," she said, "they hurt most of all, for they take no nourishment. I feel their tiny lips, but they won't take their part, and there's nothing more painful to a mother's heart." "Well, this isn't right," said George. "This isn't good. All you know is motherhood." And as he had pondered what he had seen, his path suddenly stopped and revealed a ravine. "Hold on to the rope, soldier. We'll pull you through." And out of the bile, George saw a line of men walking single file. They were ragtag and bloodied and damaged, holding onto a rope by whatever means they could manage. "Grab hold onto the rope. You'll see what I mean. The few and the proud will get you past this ravine." George thought, who is he trying to kid? This jarhead has too many holes in his lid. But as his hand touched the hemp, suddenly appeared a glorious chimp. He had muscles and hair and a jaw like a bucket. "Whatever I was going to do," said George, "I'm going to chuck it and follow this simian saint. He's all I desire. He's the M that I ain't." But as the group pulled forward, George's tail became lodged in a tree. "Wait for me," he said, "wait for me." But the line tumbled off the cliff, worse for the scrape, got off and followed the image that was less than an ape. Now George's spirits fell deeper. He longed for his mother's hairy hand, and when he opened his peepers, there stood a woman of such perfection, George did concur. "If I'd have known she was down here, I'd have combed my fur." "Hello," said our charming chimp. "Champ, what brings a Victorian secret like you to our dismal camp?" "Well," said she, "I'm a winter. I enjoy the molten lakes." "Well, I'm a chimp for all seasons, if that's what it takes." And suddenly, as he spoke, a tiny surfer shot through the wave in a quaff. She reached for the tiny Adonis, but he was through her pipeline and off. "Oh, poo," she said, "missed another," and with a manicured claw she dug into her cheek and exposed a hole where, behold and lo, George did witness beauty aids and fashion tips. How to add to the lips, take from the hips. "Oh," he said, "this must be a commercial. I'll just wait for the show to begin. I hope it's Love Boat. Even for TV, that was a sin and should be down here somewhere." But as he waited, it appeared there was no feature. "Where's the attraction?" shouted the fur-bearing fella. "Doobie, doobie, surf, doobie, chow, Bella, I'm out of here." And he called to a man on a perch, "Hey, can you see your way out of here?" "I wish I could," said the man, "for what it's worth. I've been up here so long, I've lost touch with the earth. This used to be the pillar of society, but those darn children have taken all the bricks away." "Well," said George, "you look familiar to me." "Yes," said the man, "I'm starting to see your face rings a bell that once told for me. There he is, there he is." It was Scott and Trixie, and from that meek little cataract pet grew three heads, gnashing teeth, putrid breath. George shot away as fast as he could into the room with mechanical chaps, grabbed Jack Ruby's slippers and gave them three taps. "I want to be home. I don't want to be dead." And when he awoke, there he was in his bed. And there was his mother and his brother too, and his sister and his father. And then George knew. Wasn't he smart? Wasn't he clever? There was his family more familiar than ever.
Kevin Kling imagines, writes, and tells stories in Minnesota.